Hi, this is Kirsty Allsop.
I'm Dr. Sam Godfrey, and this is the first ever Stand Up To Cancer podcast. One in two of us will be diagnosed with cancer, but this is a war that we're winning. As they say of all great battles, you must know your enemy before you can defeat them. We know more about cancer than ever before. We want to get survival to 3 in 4 within the next 20 years, and this podcast series we'll show you how. We'll be exploring everything from the prehistoric beginnings of cancer itself.
We have fossil evidence for tumours going back to woolly mammoth, sort of 40,000 years ago.
The amazing science behind revolutionary new treatments.
They look like soap bubbles because to all intents and purposes, that's exactly what they are.
Taboo cancers.
I specialise in cancer of the penis.
To our hopes for the future of cancer research.
It's the future. It's hopefully a huge breakthrough in the next couple of years that changes the face of what cancer means.
Speaking to some of those that have already been affected along the way.
It's the last thing you expect when you're told that your child has cancer.
This is Stand Up To Cancer, the podcast.
Where do we begin?
Okay, so we all know about Charles Darwin, or Chucky D to his friends.
The theory of evolution?
It's 185 years this year since he set foot on the HMS Beagle heading out towards the Galapagos Islands. And it's another 28 years before he published the theory, you know, the theory he's famous for. But on the way, he sketches his ideas in notebooks. One of them, which is called Notebook B, has got this line drawing which shows all these branches and the way sort of splitting off, and it shows how a species can diverge over time.
It looks like a tree.
Yeah, it's called the Tree of Life drawing. And incredibly, if you compare that sketch to the evolutionary sketches of cancer as it changes and adapts, they look almost identical. Cancer is evolving today.
Cancer is evolving?
Yes, it really is. And that is what Professor Tim Maughan from Oxford University told us.
Every cancer is unique and is evolving. And that means although there are lots of new ideas for treatment, we also know that cancer can respond to that treatment. And the trouble is it can quite quickly become resistant.
So this is one of the reasons we found cancer just so hard to beat. It's an ever-changing target. And more than that, you could say that the way cancer develops is a byproduct of the evolution process itself. So that's a T-Rex, but we're not looking at him. What I want to introduce you to is a little chap called Edmontosaurus. Apparently, that's the sound of an Edmontosaurus. I've never known how they work that sort of stuff out, but there we go. Anyway, the Edmontosaurus was a duck-billed dinosaur. It was a herbivore, so it ate plants, and it was about 36 feet long. And 70 million years ago, it was one of the favourite foods of the T-Rex.
So, did we find this dinosaur in a T-Rex tummy?
We didn't. It was this one actually managed to get away, and it lived to a ripe old age, whatever that would be for a dinosaur, where it was killed not by a predator, but it was actually, its life was taken by cancer.
Even dinosaurs get cancer.
Well, the Edmontosaurus certainly did. It was a fossil found in North America. And the thing is, that's ancient, 70 million years ago, but we can trace cancer back even further than that. So let me introduce you to paleontologist Dr. Patrick Randolph Quinney.
We have fossil evidence for tumours going back to woolly mammoth, sort of 40,000 years ago. So the cancer and benign tumours are out there, and there are quite a number of them in the fossil record. So we know for a long time that cancer is actually very old, but we had no evidence that it was old within the human lineage.
No evidence. Until July this year. Pat and a team from Wits University in Johannesburg have been studying bones found in caves in Malapa, a place also known to archaeologists and the likes as the cradle of humankind.
The species we're looking at is about 1.98 million years old, and it's a species called Australopithecus sediba.
These guys are on the human evolutionary family tree, but they're kind of, I suppose, more like cousins than direct ancestors.
They would have stood probably around about 1.6 metres tall, if that, would have weighed probably around about 40 kilos, had relatively small brains, small heads, quite an extended, slightly ape-like face, relatively short lower legs and quite long arms.
There'd be a few branches down on Darwin's tree to us. They looked kind of a cross between humans and chimpanzees, I suppose.
They walked upright, and Sidiba actually has a relatively modern-looking foot in some respects, but also quite ape-like in others.
And they were running around climbing trees in Malapa. And 2 million years ago, of course, you can imagine that's a much more dangerous place than today.
The specimen number is NH1, but he actually has a nickname as Carabos. He would have been a equivalent of a kind of modern human child of around 12, 13 years of age, so kind of late child, early teen.
Caribou's skeleton was found in this underground cave by a 9-year-old boy back in 2008. And because it's so old, it's one of the most important discoveries in archaeology. One of the most incredible things about Caribou is how he died.
We looked at the skeleton of Caribou using techniques of forensic trauma reconstruction. And what we found was that basically both him and a female, adult female who was with him, fell a significant height, perhaps 25, 30 metres, in what's probably a natural death trap situation, and broke a couple of bones on the way down.
But when they put Caribou's bones through a powerful X-ray scanner, they discovered something extraordinary.
There was a large aperture or hole present in what's called the spinous process. So basically, if you run your fingers up and down your own back, the knobbly bits that you feel are the spinous processes. And in that bony process, there was this large cavity.
So the team took a closer look.
Was it trauma? Was it an infection? And we realised that this was a benign tumour.
A near 2 million-year-old benign tumour. The earliest cancer ever discovered in the human lineage.
But if it's benign, then that isn't what killed Caribou.
Not directly, but Pat thinks it might have contributed.
We know that clinical cases today that this disease, if it occurs in the back, creates localised swelling, discomfort, pain. It's not very pleasant at all. Even though the tumour itself isn't going to kill you, it's still quite an unpleasant thing to have. And it reduces mobility. In a paleo situation where these animals are having to survive in quite a hostile environment and avoid predators, find food, etc., and avoid falling into caves, anything that limits your capacity to function normally might actually have led to your death.
The team have also found a foot bone in another case, which was a 1.7 million-year-old malignant tumour that may well have caused its owner's death.
Oh, no!
And it just, I suppose, highlights how long this disease has been with us.
So cancer is not a modern disease then?
Far from it. Cancer has probably been with us almost as long as life itself. If you think about how evolution works, a cell grows and divides, and sometimes genetic mistakes creep in. And occasionally, those genetic mistakes can be an advantage. Maybe a fish ends up with a slightly longer fin, which allows it to get through the mudflats a bit better. And sometimes, those mistakes can actually be cancer. So what we can say is that it's always been there. And today, we got to a point where 1 in 2 people are diagnosed with cancer in the UK. We know, for example, the Egyptians tried to treat breast cancer. There's a papyrus that talks about how to treat breast cancer best, and they literally say, nothing can be done. Nothing. But finally, we're in a situation where things can be done.
Sadly, not soon enough for Caribou, though.
No, sadly not, poor chap. And that's really interesting, because cancer in children is rare. It makes up less than 1% of all new cases in the UK. The reason why 1 in 2 of us will be diagnosed with cancer is partially because we're all living so much longer. We don't completely understand why, but cancer does seem to struggle to develop in young people. Survival's good too. More than 80% live for 5 years or more. That's obviously not good enough, but it is also interesting that it is so high. We're now looking at how children seem to be able to resist cancer as a way of perhaps treating the disease itself.
Well, I want you to meet someone.
My name is Josh and I am 6 years old.
So that's Josh. And we interviewed him with his mum, Karen. He was a bit reluctant.
You can do it, come on. Of course you can do it.
No, I can.
Yes, you can. You talk all the time. Come on.
Well, you say don't talk.
Yeah, but today's different.
But he got there in the end.
If I do very, very well, you get my Ant Manager suit today.
Yeah, if you ask Daddy nicely.
No, Mummy.
Okay.
Because Mummy made the deal.
Okay. Deal? Yeah, we do really well.
I think you've got your new agent there, Kirsty.
I think he can replace Phil. Well, Josh is a very determined little boy. When he was nearly 2 years old, he was diagnosed with cancer.
So how did you feel, Joshua, when you were sick, when you had cancer? Can you remember what it was like? Okay, tell Mummy what was
scared.
It? You were scared, and why were you scared? Take this out.
I thought I'd been hostile for a really long time.
We were devastated. At the time, you just don't imagine that young children are going to have cancer. Obviously, we know kids have cancer, but it's the last thing you expect when you're told that your child has cancer.
Doctors had found a Wilms tumour on Josh's kidney just 1 month before his second birthday.
That's a really rare cancer. It mainly affects children under five, and I'd say there's maybe 80 cases a year in the UK.
Josh had a stage 4 tumour and the cancer spread to his lungs.
Now, some people think stage 4 means terminal. It doesn't, although it is more difficult to treat. Doctors tend to use 4 stages to describe the size of a tumour, how far it's grown. So stage 1 means it's small, it's contained in the organ that it started in. When you get a stage 2 tumour, it's slightly larger, but it usually hasn't really started to spread. 3 is larger still, and it may have actually started to actually invade the surrounding tissues and might have started to put out feelers and cells are beginning to break off. And stage 4 means it's spread to another organ. A treatment like radiotherapy wouldn't necessarily be suitable for this because radiotherapy is very, very targeted. So stage 4 cancers often need something that works in the whole system, something like chemotherapy that you put into the blood and it goes around the entire body.
He had to have chemotherapy, radiation and various operations to remove a kidney and a part of his lung. He just took it all in his stride. I think that's the benefit of having cancer at such a young age. He didn't know any better, so for him it was normal going to the hospital every day. Not very good at this, am I?
You just can't imagine what that must be like as a parent.
We don't really know what causes Wilms. It happens when cells in the kidney don't mature properly in the womb. And often it's really hard to spot. There might be a sort of a painless swelling in the abdomen, perhaps, or a warning size could suddenly be that a baby jumps a nappy size.
Josh had 2 years of treatment and he's okay. He's in remission, he's started school and he has a really cool scar.
Okay, can you show the camera your scar?
Wow.
You're very brave, weren't you?
No.
Sam, guess what Josh wants to be when he grows up?
It's pretty clear, Ant-Man.
Well?
I would like to be an astronaut, or a fireman.
Or
a police. Or a doctor. To help other kids.
Good choice, Josh. That's really why so many people put so much effort into fighting cancer. So that our children can grow up to be anything they want to be. We're developing new treatments right now, using the most advanced technologies that we can produce. And if we look back into the history of cancer, seeing where it came from, how it developed, we can really begin to get a sense of it, get a really good understanding of it. And all of that will help us beat it.
I'm sure Josh would be fascinated to know the link between him and the 12-year-old boy from 2 million years ago. Next week on Stand Up to Cancer, the podcast,
we take a peek at the pioneering science that's being funded by Stand Up to Cancer and find out why bubbles might be the answer to the future of chemotherapy treatment.
Our aim is to try to find a method for treating tumours that minimises side effects, and hopefully in such a way that we can get complete penetration of a drug so that we can actually achieve a cure rather than simply a treatment.
For too long, cancer's been fighting dirty. It's been targeting grannies, going after kids, and coming back for the same people over and over again. Even taking cheap shots at our breasts and testicles. It's got to the point where 1 in 2 of us will be diagnosed with cancer, and that totally sucks.
Now is our time to act. To say F that. Time to use whatever means necessary, no matter how ridiculous, to lay the smackdown on cancer.
To help fund the rebellion against cancer, text AUDIO to 70404 right now to give £5 plus one standard message rate. 16 plus only, and you must have the bill payer's permission. It closes on the 31st of March 2017. Full T's and C's are available at sutc.org.uk/terms. 100% of your donation will go to Cancer Research UK in support of the Stand Up to Cancer campaign. Stand Up To Cancer and the Stand Up To Cancer brand marks are registered trademarks or trademarks of the Entertainment Industry Foundation. Cancer Research UK is a registered charity in England and Wales, Scotland and the Isle of Man.
Stand Up To Cancer, the podcast, is an Audio Boom production produced by Karen Bevan and Jamie Wareham. Executive producers Dan Quick, Audio Boom's head of production David Marsland, and global head of content Ruth Fitzsimons.